on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Aaron Ward from TSN, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for joining us here. You know, former first-round pick, fifth overall of the Winnipeg Jets. Did you, it's always nice to talk to a former Winnipeg Jet.
Former Jet, yeah. Picked, but never actually got to play there,
Do you still consider yourself a Jet?
Always. I mean, that's the start of my career. You know, standing up on the stage, being welcomed in by Mike Smith. And, I had a couple visits to Winnipeg prior to eventually ending up in Detroit. So I felt like I was getting prepared to play in Winnipeg, and it just didn't come to fruition.
Well, there you go. Anyways, we're thrilled that you're able to join us now here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show in Winnipeg. Aaron, let's start. You know, you have the, you know, with us talking to you, we have the advantage and the good luck to be able to talk to a guy who's just recently retired from the NHL. So you have some insight into, you played with a number of different teams. So you have the insight into what's really going on in a lot of dressing rooms and the mindset of the players. So we're probably going to tap into that throughout this interview. Hopefully, yeah, that'll be okay with you. Starting in Boston, where, of course, you played for the Bruins for a number of years. You know, the team lost game one to the Canadiens, rather. What is their mindset going to be going into game two?
Well, I don't know if you saw what came across the wire a couple hours ago, but Chara spent his evening in the hospital. I think, as I understand it, he was a little under the weather for the last few days, and I think that coupled with playing the games and his mentality of overtraining, he got himself in a precarious situation of being dehydrated. But it goes back again. There should be no panic in the Boston locker room right now. They're still that potent team, physical team. It was a very kind of dull game, if I put it that way. Great for the Habs. I mean, it's a great game in their fashion. You know, it was up and down a little bit, but it was still pretty contained. Montreal didn't open up and give Boston much. It was a great performance by Price. You finally got Scott Gomez to show up for a game and contribute. So things went well for Montreal, but on the Boston end, they've got to maintain that mentality of, you know, don't do anything that's drastic out there. Don't get caught up in the emotion of the game. Just play the game the way you're supposed to and be disciplined. Brad Marchand took a dumb penalty, and, just those things can't happen. You can't be behind the eight ball. Montreal is a pretty potent team. You know, they got a great power play, and against Boston throughout the year, they ran at a clip of about 30%. So that's far exceeding the expectations of most power plays.
You talk about sort of not panicking. Bruins general manager Peter Chiarelli, before the series started, said that if the team doesn't win at least two playoff series, the year is a failure. As a player, you have your general manager coming out and making those proclamations. Does that motivate you, or do you play a little bit tighter as a result of him saying things like that?
Oh, I don't think it's news to the players. You know, it's been a disappointment for a while, not really stepping up to the plate. Up 3-0 against Philly. Getting to game six to get back now it's tied 3-3, and then they go into a game and they're up 3-0. I think that is deemed a failure. You're just about, handed an opportunity to go into the conference finals, and you hand it back to Philadelphia by letting them back into it. So, in the year previous, I was a part of it. Losing to Carolina, expectations were not that was going to be something that was even in the realm of possibility, and it happened. So to come up short two consecutive years, it is the magic number 8. You have to have 8 wins in order to be, have this season considered even close to a success. They've got to get in the conference finals.
Aaron, we wanted to transition now to the Pittsburgh-Tampa series, and obviously Pittsburgh won Game 1, and then last night Tampa gave them a bit of a spanking with a 5-1 victory. In your opinion, what was Pittsburgh's downfall last night?
Mistakes, preparedness. I think it's everything. It's 7 games, and I hate using cliches during interviews or in any assessment of a series, but that's why it's 7 games, and it's the marathon, not a sprint analogy. You're gonna have bad games, just like in the regular season. You can't be at your best for every single game. And it happens during the playoffs. It's important though. The focus should be on the fact that it ends at one game. Pitt was not sharp from the goaltending end to the defensive end, and you got to give Tampa credit. They came out with a spark. They were on the road. They jumped on them. They got shots. One of the things, Fleury reminds me of a guy like Brodeur. You know, tough nut to crack there, but one of the things you have to do is direct shots towards them and hope for those rebounds. You saw that goal that Nate Thompson got driving the net after the little bobble in the neutral zone by the Pittsburgh D, but it's creating your opportunities. You just can't wait and get that perfect shot. With Fleury, he's going to stop most things. So get every single shot and hope for a rebound. And Tampa was great. You know, it's they got even production across the board from Tampa.
Moving to the Washington Rangers series, Washington with their new defensive style, as we've spoken about throughout the year, they've only allowed two goals in the first two games against the Rangers. Oh, what are they doing that has made them successful in shutting down the Rangers' offense?
It's tough because I looked at the game and everybody's like, "Wow, look at what Washington did." You know, it's 2-1. They went to overtime, but I wasn't really impressed with their game one. It's not something if you look at. Going forward into round two and three, and you get a better opponent, and say you run up against a Boston or a Philly or even Buffalo right now. If you're going to play that style of game that they played against New York in game one, you're not going to win games. Game two is more impressive for the fact that really New York had not a whole lot. Coupled with the fact that you're not getting a very concentrated or a big performance from guys like Gabrick. Gabrick has been not even present for the series and much of the last part of the season. You know, he came up no goals in the last 10 games, not something you need from an all-star. But Washington has really stepped up and kept everything in the perimeter. Every time New York got across their blue line, the puck stayed to the outside. There was no real traffic, and you get that New York maybe throws Avery in there to disturb and get in front of Neuwirth and get some traffic, but you can't get to the front of the net if the puck is really not in your possession in the defensive zone. I mean, if Washington has the puck and retrieves every dump in, or by the time you retrieve that puck, you're standing face against the glass and really have no support. There's not much offense can be generated. So Washington's been pretty good. And Pierre McGuire made a good point yesterday during his interview, during his telecast, that for the first time in a long time, you see Ovechkin buying into the concept that you get your 40 seconds, and if you expend your energy in the defensive zone, after that 40, 45 seconds, you got to make a line change. And you saw Ovechkin over and over, not a single shift going over a minute. He's bought into the team concept, and really, I think Washington's taken that lead.
I believe there was even one shift where the Caps had the puck deep in the Rangers zone, and Ovechkin, rather than get involved in the offensive play, skated off to the bench for a line change, which is unheard of when you think of Alex Ovechkin.
It's not that players are selfish. It sometimes just takes a little time to get it. You know, and you think that your ultimate performance will direct you in a victorious manner, and it's going to be one guy, it's going to be Ovechkin, but it looks like he's cooling in that. You know what? A fresher Ovechkin with more concentrated time and more concentrated effort is going to win the game, and he gets that it's going to take an entire team to win the Stanley Cup. You know, you watch teams that go about doing it, and it was Chicago across the board, pretty talented team last year, but no one component was the reason why it happened. It was a team-wide effort.
We're joined on the line by Aaron Ward of TSN.
Now, Nashville was up 1-0 on Anaheim, and then Anaheim took the game two yesterday, 5-3. What kind of system do the Ducks employ, and you know how successful will Nashville be in countering that system?
Well, I think that what you saw yesterday out of Anaheim was the fact that they accept that Nashville is such a system-oriented team. I listened to an interview of Mike Fisher, and he more or less came across saying that part of their mentality in Nashville is they system you to death to the point where they bore you to death.
Sure.
You know, it's like the New Jersey Devils of the 90s, where there's not a guy out of position. It's a slow, monotonous game, and they capitalize on opportunities. And what Anaheim finally did, and you saw in Bobby Ryan's goal, third one, quick transition. Don't let Nashville get the position. Once they're in position, they're set. But if you can beat someone and create an opening, then they have to readjust midstream, and it's tough to, when you're so bent on systems, to then have to, you know, this guy has to pick this guy up, and everybody has to feed off one guy making that decision, where if you're set in your positioning within a system, you know, you just let things occur, and you know this guy, that's his territory, that's his territory, that's his territory. Making guys think and get out of their comfort zone is essential to beating a system, and that's what the Anaheim did yesterday. It was a high-octane game. They got the puck moving. There was a little grit involved there. Unfortunately for Bobby Ryan, he looks like he might have got himself in some trouble, so there might be some changes coming game three. But
do you expect
Anaheim
to see him suspended? Do you expect to see Bobby Ryan suspended?
You know what? I will concede the fact that as a former player and so new to this, I it's tough for me to offer opinions on what I think will happen. I don't have that basis of knowledge like McKenzie and Drager and knowing how to compare. But I think, is there a possibility? Absolutely. You know, it's different. You know, it was so flagrant to bring your leg up that high and then stomp. And I've seen it happen. I think I've done it before, but I haven't done it in the capacity that I get my foot up there. It's more of a jabbing, kicking motion to your foot, a slew foot. You know, they're battling for a puck. And he is actually, Bobby Ryan's actually pinning Blum along the boards. And so when it's down there, it makes only sense to me that you would drag your foot out and try and pick the guy's foot up, not raise your leg and then stomp the top of the laces. And the weird part is the way in which he landed that foot. You see Blum's ankle kind of turn inwards, which is a pretty dangerous thing. And anytime you use an escape blade and in a manner that it's a weapon, that's tough. You know, it's not something that you recommend as a player out there.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Aaron Ward. And Aaron, you obviously played in Detroit for many years and won two Stanley Cups, and you played with one of the best defensemen of all time in Nicklas Lidström. What did you see in Lidström on a day-to-day basis that ensures that he keeps performing at that high, top-notch level?
That seems to be the $64,000 question. You know, it's not that he does anything in particular. He's just so consistent. It's consistent in his being, consistent in his approach, consistent in who he is. It's knowing that what he brings to the table every day is not just enough. It's beyond what most can. So he's such a smart, savvy, heady player. His skill set's unbelievable. You always find that he's in the right position at the right time. It's as a defenseman, and you're playing the game, you know, occasionally you pick up a feed for a game when you're in another town. You sit down and watch Nick Lidström. It's frustrating to see how easy the game comes to him. You know, it's little intricacies of stick positioning and positioning of his body and getting in the right spot on the ice where, you know, most guys struggle to find, you know, the quiet zones. He always figures out where he should be to allow himself the most time when he has puck possession. It's something you can't teach. It's just, it's innate. It's in him, and the unfortunate part is it's not for sale. I would have bought some of that a long time ago.
Absolutely. Aaron, we'll let you go on this last question. You played in Detroit during that final year for Winnipeg when the Jets and the Red Wings met in the first round of the playoffs. You know, the Jets, there was a foregone conclusion that they were leaving at that point in time. With the Coyotes now and the distraction about the uncertainty of the team's future, do you think that is affecting the players, or do you think that they're able to sort of block that out and instead just focus on the task at hand on the ice?
Well, I think someone in the Phoenix organization has got to be telling the players, you know what, this is beyond our control. We play hockey, we're a team, we present ourselves representing the Phoenix Coyotes, and all of the decisions made involved with this circumstance are out of our control. And you go out and play a game, and it would be financial suicide for anybody to prematurely start making any comments about where they are or they're not going. You know, Phoenix is in the midst of a playoff run, and they've got to play against the Detroit Red Wings, and that's a big attraction. So monetarily, you'd be shooting yourself in the pocketbook if you made an announcement and Phoenix fans just decided to stay away. And I think that, there's so much going on and so much concentration on the fact that the playoffs are in full swing that the NHL doesn't want to detract from that. You know, why do you really want to, why do you want to make an announcement? Why do you want to draw the attention away from what's great about this game? It's the game itself, the teams and the players. So I just don't see anything coming out that's valid. The only people that are really concerned about it are the people of Phoenix, the fans of Phoenix, the fans in Winnipeg, and media members that can get a lot of play out of it. You know, I don't think anybody truly knows. Everybody seems to have an inside, track to the information. But when it comes down to it, the one guy that does know is Gary Bettman. He doesn't seem to be showing his hand.
Aaron Ward of TSN Versus and the Big Ten Network. Thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
All right, thanks for having me.
Take care, Aaron.
Thanks a lot, Aaron.
Let's go to break. When we come back after these, Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News.
Back-to-back interviews, Drew.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.